Today is Thursday, June 18th. What to know today about the new murder charges against a former Atlanta police officer and what to expect next in the case. Also, the new scathing allegations about President Trump, what his former national security advisor now says, and how Trump is responding. Plus, big changes to some well-known brands, how to turn off all political ads on social media, and Lyft goes electric. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview, explaining key things to consider as you choose where it's safe to venture out again. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. The former Atlanta police officer who shot and killed Rayshard Brooks and set off another wave of protests is now charged with 11 counts, including felony murder, and that could potentially lead to the death penalty. We're talking about ex-officer Garrett Rolfe. He was fired from Atlanta PD after the shooting in a Wendy's parking lot last week. And the other officer who was there, Devin Brosnan, faces three lesser charges now, though he has said he'll cooperate with prosecutors. Remember, after Brooks failed a breathalyzer last Friday night, video footage shows the two officers struggling to get Brooks into handcuffs. Brooks grabbed the officer's taser and ran, and seemed to turn around for a moment when he was shot. Well, now prosecutors have revealed new details about what happened that night. They say after Brooks was shot twice in the back, Officer Rolfe said, "I got him." He also kicked him while he was already on the ground and Brosnan stood on his shoulder. Neither provided any medical treatment for more than 2 minutes. The district attorney now says the officer should not have fired a gun at someone who was running away. And the ACLU says the charges mark progress in a movement to correct injustices. But both officers' attorneys say their clients were justified in their actions that night, since they feared for their own lives and the lives of other people in the parking lot. And the police union said local prosecutors should have waited to see the findings from the state investigation, which is still going on. There were also reports last night that some Atlanta police officers were walking off the job or calling in sick to protest the charges. President Trump also defended the officers. He told Fox News, quote, "You can't resist a police officer." He also said police have not been treated fairly in America, so he hopes they get a fair shake in court. The AP reports both officers involved have until 6 p.m. today to turn themselves in. There are some pretty shocking accusations against President Trump in former National Security Advisor John Bolton's upcoming book. Parts of the book called The Room Where It Happened have been released now, and here are a few of the allegations. First, Bolton says Trump personally asked China's leader to help him win the 2020 presidential election. Bolton also says Trump gave his blessing to the Chinese president to build concentration camps to detain the country's Uyghur Muslims. The book quotes Trump as saying it was exactly the right thing to do. He also wrote that Trump said invading Venezuela would be, quote, cool, and would please Republican voters in Florida. But Russian President Vladimir Putin apparently persuaded Trump to back off. In general, Bolton alleges Trump always put his own re-election ahead of the nation's interests. But President Trump is calling Bolton a disgruntled employee who is lying and exaggerating. He also told the Wall Street Journal that everyone in the White House hated Bolton. And for very different reasons, Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff is also criticizing Bolton. Schiff wrote on Twitter that the former National Security Advisor should have testified when lawmakers asked him to during the impeachment inquiry. Instead, Schiff says Bolton refused so he could save the bombshells for the book. Either way, the U.S. Justice Department is trying to stop any more of the book from coming out. It's not only suing, but also asked for an emergency hearing this Friday. TBD if the book gets published as planned next Tuesday. A recent report from the Veterans Affairs Department found an average of about 20 American veterans and service members die by suicide every day. And that's 1.5 times higher than those who have not served. So now President Trump laid out a plan to address this issue. It's called PREVENTS. That stands for President's Roadmap to Empower Veterans and End a National Tragedy of Suicide. It will start with a public messaging campaign that will launch in the coming weeks to raise awareness about suicide. The plan also awards grants to community programs, and it gets a task force to come up with a national strategy on suicide-related research. Republican lawmakers praised the plan, and the country's largest veterans service group said it'll help get rid of the stigma surrounding mental illness. But Democrats and others say Trump's plan doesn't go far enough. The CEO of another veterans group told the AP he's disappointed the plan doesn't address the root causes of mental health issues. It seems Americans are getting some mixed messages about COVID-19. For example, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says the country is still in the grip of the coronavirus pandemic. Fauci says he doesn't like hearing people talk about a second wave because, according to him, we're still in the first wave. The director of the Harvard Global Health Institute told Stat News, quote, "We may be done with the pandemic, but the pandemic is not done with us." Dr. Ashish Jha says at first the virus was only in a few places, but now it's coming to more counties, cities, and states. But that tone is a lot different from what the nation's top two leaders have said in recent days. President Trump told Gray DC last night the number of new COVID-19 infections are tiny compared to what they once were, and he said the virus is dying out. Also this week in an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal, Vice President Pence wrote, quote, "We are winning the fight against the invisible enemy." He talked about how the administration has expanded testing, supply production, and medical research. Now, to be clear, data from Johns Hopkins shows 21 states are seeing a downward trend in new cases, but another 21 are still seeing upticks. And 10 states are seeing their highest average of daily cases since the pandemic started. NASA's next Mars rover will pay tribute to healthcare workers back on Earth. The so-called Perseverance has been outfitted with a small aluminum plate that features the staff and serpent symbol of the medical community holding up the Earth. NASA says it's meant to salute the frontline workers who have been keeping everyone safe during the pandemic over the last few months. The rover is scheduled to launch next month. All right, we have more news coming up, but first let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor today, Skillshare. Skillshare offers thousands of inspiring online classes for creative and curious people on topics ranging from illustration, design, and photography to freelancing, productivity, and career success. So whether you just want more random moments of creativity to break up the routine of more days spent indoors, or you want to take your hobbies to the next level by learning new skills, Skillshare offers classes for you and millions of others. And I love that most classes are less than 60 minutes with short lessons to fit any schedule. For example, I spent 20 minutes Sunday taking the class called Real Productivity, Create Your Ideal Week. And it helped me plan out this entire week in a simple but more effective way. So explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/newsworthy and get 2 free months of premium membership. Again, get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/newsworthy. Now, back to the news. The 130-year-old Aunt Jemima brand of pancake syrup is getting a new name and image. Quaker Oats says it recognizes the current brand is, quote, based on a racial stereotype. The logo features a black woman who critics say is based on a woman born into slavery and represents racist stereotypes from that era. This image has been updated over the years, but now the company admits it's not enough. The new name and look are in the works still, and they should be ready to go in the fall of this year. Quaker also said the company will donate at least $5 million over the next 5 years to support the black community. And right after that, news two other iconic brands also announced changes in the works. Uncle Ben's Rice also plans to change its image. And Cream of Wheat, as well as the company behind Mrs. Butterworth Syrup, both say they'll be doing a complete review of their branding as well. The Boy Scouts of America is creating a new diversity and inclusion merit badge. Although it's still working on the details, the badge will, quote, require Scouts learn about and engage with other groups and cultures. It will be required for kids to become an Eagle Scout as well. The organization says it supports Black Lives Matter, and it wants to take meaningful action. Keep in mind, the Boy Scouts have long been criticized for lacking diversity. The New York Times reports nearly 3/4 of its youth members are white, while only 7% are Black. So the organization says it's going to keep making adjustments to make sure everyone feels valued and like they belong. Two top U.S. companies are making multi-million dollar contributions to black causes. First, the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, is donating $120 million to historically black colleges and universities. The New York Times says black colleges have never received an individual donation that big. So Hastings hopes it will inspire other wealthy people to donate. Meanwhile, Google pledged $175 million to black entrepreneurs and black-owned startups and small businesses. The company also says it plans to hire 30% more non-white executives over the next 5 years. Facebook and Facebook-owned Instagram are giving users the option to turn off all political ads. The feature will block paid advertisements from candidates, super PACs, and other political organizations. And when the new setting rolls out across the U.S. in the coming weeks, people will just have to flip the ads to off in the Settings tab. Lyft is going electric. The ride-hailing service plans to use only electric vehicles by the year 2030. So every time you would order a ride, an electric car will show up. The company isn't paying its drivers to switch, but Mashable reports it plans to work with automakers to provide discounts. It also wants to partner with utility districts to make it cheaper to charge the cars. Lyft even thinks drivers will save money by going electric since they have to buy their own gas. To be clear, the company says it will not kick out drivers who are still using gasoline-powered cars in a decade. It just plans to create such alluring incentives that all of its drivers will want to switch over within 10 years. And that's it for the main 10 minutes of news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, our expert is breaking down the risk factors to consider now that much of the country is reopening. He'll share a few key things to think about when deciding whether it's safe to go to the gym, salon, a restaurant, protest, a swimming pool, or back to school in the fall, all while COVID-19 still exists. Dr. Aaron Brummage is an associate professor of biology at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. His research focuses on the evolution of the immune system. And you may have read his recent blog post, his practical, specific way of explaining the research and the science about how the virus spreads in different environments, went viral last month, getting millions of views in just its first week. So now you'll hear from him directly. But first, this interview is brought to you by Blinkist. If you ever hear a topic mentioned on the show that piques your interest, you can learn more about it in just 15 minutes with Blinkist. Hop over to the Blinkist app and get the key points or perspectives from nonfiction best-selling books right on your smartphone. Go to Blinkist.com/news to try it free for 7 days and then save on your new subscription. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Aaron Brummage, thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Thank you for having me, Erica.
So I'd first love to just get your take on the fact that we are in this reopening phase where everything from restaurants to salons are starting to reopen around the country. Do you think that this is a safe thing to be doing?
It's obviously comes with risks that we're reopening, and the risk is different depending on where you are in the country. So it's very much a regional approach.
And so let's talk specifically about workplaces and offices. Should certain offices be able to reopen if, let's say, they try to change workers' shifts so that only half of workers are in the office at any given time? Or what do you suggest or recommend for workplaces?
Each work environment is going to be a little different. The quality of the air filtration and exchange that they have in that building and the number of people. But certainly reducing, either shifting a group coming in the morning versus one at night or alternating days, anything that lowers the number of people down in a workplace certainly reduces the amount of risk for infection in that workplace. If you are working in a place where there is higher risk, so poor air exchange and maybe not the best filtration of air, then you've got to look at employing personal protection. And that's where we need to make sure that everyone is wearing a mask, because you can have just a simple cloth mask is my mask protects you, your mask protects me. So there are some environments where you need to have lots of people and you need to invest in better PPE, protection equipment for everybody there.
Briefly, can you go through gyms, salons, pools, and maybe restaurants too?
Yeah, so gyms are an interesting one because when you get tired and you're doing some sort of cardio, you are breathing very, very hard. And with breathing hard, you're releasing lots of respiratory droplets. We know you can be infected and infectious and still feel perfectly fine for, up to 5 days. So when you put those two things together, the risk ends up being really quite high in a gym. But on the other side of things with gyms, they're usually in very, very large spaces. And that gyms have often invested in really good air filtration and air exchange because they have to, because of hot, sweaty, potentially smelly people. There's that balance of there's the risk that comes from the type of activities they do versus the offsetting risk of the space and air exchange that they may already have. Hairdressers bring you very close, so there's the risk. For an extended period, there's another risk. And hairdressers uniformly like to talk. So there's another risk again, because talking increases the amount of droplets that you put out. But typical hairdressers also have a lot of space. It's rare that every chair is filled, so you can spread people out. They can wear masks and the customer can wear masks without too much hassle. Swimming pools that are well maintained are inherently safe because of the disinfection agents that are in there. Everything from some pools have UV, others have ozone, most have chlorine. So pools outside of a locker room and having a big pool party, if we're using it for fitness or basic recreation where you're just not bringing a lot of people really close together are not risky, in my opinion. They have a risk, but they're not a high risk. And then restaurants. Every restaurant is very unique. You know, a Japanese barbecue or an Asian restaurant that is cooking in front of you with a big vent up above where you're eating and cooking, sucking the air out, makes huge amounts of air exchanges every hour, which makes the environment safer when we're talking about building up a respiratory burden, a virus in the air. But then others, you know, the ones that I worry about the most, about how it's going to be difficult for them to engineer their environment, is sort of more of the smaller boutique restaurants that may only have 4 or 5 tables in them. If they can open the windows up and get a good cross breeze through the restaurant, you want to drop numbers down so people aren't really closer on top of each other, then you lower the risk significantly in those circumstances. So it's all a matter of airflow, air exchange, natural breeze, and how many people that you have into a space that you sort of need to assess on whether it's risky or not.
Can you go to the restaurant if it's outdoor dining, for example, with people outside of your household, or should we still be sticking with people we're already around?
What we've sort of found as a family and as a, you know, a larger friend group that we have, is that we are willing to socialize with other families that have a similar risk aversion to us. As in, they're taking precautions about not being infected, but not going crazy, self-isolating, locking themselves completely away from society.
Here's the big one. What are your thoughts about schools reopening this fall?
Hopefully that we get better data as the year goes on, as the next few months goes on, to really understand the risk that we face by putting children into these enclosed spaces for an extended period of time in regards to not only their infection and the severity of disease, but also of the teachers and staff that are in those classrooms and that interact, and whether they bring it home to their families. The school spread of infection could lead to much larger community spread as they bring it home.
So yeah, it sounds like there's not really a good answer on that part, but at the very least, expect it to look very different than it used to.
Yeah, and I think we have to plan on that, because even if schools say we're going to go back and go in person, one of the things that we need to keep in mind is not everyone is healthy. So we're going to have to work out some hybrid way to make sure that students, no matter their health, are still able to be adequately educated. So I think no matter what, there's going to be a hybrid system, but it may be just a few people online and the majority in person, or it could actually be the other way around. It just depends on what infection rates look like when we come around to September.
What about the risk of protesting that we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks?
Protesting and getting together in a large group increase risks of infection. However, when I've looked at these demonstrations, the mask usage in the vast majority of these protests has been exceptionally high. And so I think they are aware of the risk. They're mitigating the risk as much as they can, but certainly the situation they have put themselves into has increased the overall risk of increased transmission of this virus in the community.
And finally, some experts have said the world we used to live in is just never coming back.
I don't take that type of approach. I think that at some stage, not too far away, in the next, I don't think it'll be any longer than 2 years, but it could be much sooner. It could be 6 months. I feel fairly comfortable that we're coming back to where we were. We're just going to have some pain getting there.
As always, you can read more about this topic, our guest, and all the news stories mentioned in this episode at thenewsworthy.com/show notes. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 a.m. every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with your news roundup for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.